All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. We're going to get right to it here. We're going to record 2 hours today. Calls and questions are starting to come in pretty heavy. If you want to get through with a question, a comment, a topic, you need to press one here pretty quickly. Let's get started.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, you name it. We'll tackle it here on the show. All you have to do is pick up the phone and ask the question. We're going to get to those questions in just a little bit. I was doing some reading this morning, like I do every morning, and I came across kind of an interesting idea. Simple, but I think it's a nice little tweak to some of the other things I've talked about in the past that can really help you make positive changes, whether it's your life, your business, your money, your relationships, whatever it is. And it's the idea of we all know that there are changes we could make that would improve things, whether we're talking about our business, our money, our health. We know what the changes are. There is no lack of information. Lots of ideas, lots of things you could do, but yet we resist the change. And one of the ideas I was reading this morning was that many times we focus on the changes that would be difficult to make, and that's why we avoid them. Well, might be difficult for one person, might be easy for another. There's no one size fits all in this. But let's take your business, for example. We all know that if you improve fuel economy, something we talk about a lot on the show, that you have more money left that you get to spend, more money left in your pocket. If you spend less on fuel, you have more profit left over. And we all know lots of ways to save fuel economy or to improve fuel economy and save money on fuel, yet a lot of people resist doing anything. The idea is make a list of all the things you know of that you know you could do to change something, to improve something, to make it better. And then look through that list to find the easiest thing. To find the one thing, no matter how small it is, find the one thing when you look at it, you go, oh, yeah, I could do that. Many times, though, you look at it and go, yeah, but that's not going to make much difference. It's not worth doing. It is. Every positive step is worth doing, and then you can build on that. You know, I've been giving an example of this for years, and lots of people have used this and it works. We just need to expand this idea. We know that the slower you go, the better fuel economy you're going to get. People have tried to argue with me about that for years. It's just physics. I didn't make this stuff up. So I've told people, slow down 1 mile per hour for the next 2 weeks. Now, that's a pretty simple change. You really can't tell the difference between 68 miles an hour and 67 miles an hour. It may seem like it's too small of a change, like it's not going to make a difference. But we do know over time, it does make a difference. You know, on average, that 1 mile per hour would save you between $500 and $1,000 a year, depending on fuel costs. So if you normally set your cruise at 68, set it at 67. That's a change, and it's a change in the right direction. And do it for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, and then do it again. Go from 67 to 66 for a week or two or three or whatever works for you. It's a step in the right direction. Many people have used that strategy. and saved themselves thousands of dollars a year. But let's take that idea and expand on it. List all those things that could improve your fuel economy and work on one a week or one every 2 weeks or one every month. Whatever it is, whatever is comfortable and easy for you. Now, I say all the time, do the hard work. Some people have a very, very difficult time doing the hard work. So maybe for some people, the idea really needs to be, in the beginning, do the easy work. Go through the things that you know will make a difference and find the easiest thing you can do and try it. And if you add up enough easy things over time, you will be doing the hard work. So take any area in your life. We just talked about your business. And more specifically, we talked about fuel economy. But what about doing your bookkeeping? We know that will make you more profitable. We know that will help you run a better business. There's no question about that. But a lot of people don't like paperwork. They don't like numbers. They don't know how to get started. Well, take the easy way. What's one easy step that you could be doing? What if you just got your receipts a little more organized? You don't have to do anything with them yet. Just get them a little more organized, whatever that would mean for you. What if you decided to track just your fuel mileage for right now? What if that's the only step you decided to do? It gets you used to dealing with numbers several times a week. Every time you get fuel, you track your fuel mileage. That would be one small, easy step. Again, I'm giving you ideas, but what might be easy for me might be hard for you. What I might think is hard, you might think is easy. The idea here is this is up to you. Make a list and then look through the list and say, oh, you know, that one looks really easy. Even if you don't think it's going to make a difference, try it anyway. And what if you set a schedule to try one new thing every week? If that sounds hard to you, what if you set a schedule to do one new thing every month instead? Even one a month would mean you did 12 new things every year. That would make a difference. So how do you get started? One way is to pick an area in your life and make the list. The other way is to pick all the areas in your life and just list those. So what areas are important to you? Again, it doesn't matter what's important to anybody else. This is only about you. Give it a try. See what you think. Let's get some phone calls and get this show started today. Let's start off in Pennsylvania. Nick, welcome to the program.
Thanks for taking my call, Kevin. I've got quite a few questions, so if we run up to time, please hold me over. We were talking
sure.
the other day about a tire hop and radial runout. What happens if I check tires and the radial runout is over 60 thousandths? What does a driver do?
Okay, good question, and I wanted to get to that. We ran out of time last time, so I'm glad you called back to ask. So if we have more than 60 thousandths run out, that we know is enough to start to cause problems. You'll feel vibrations, you'll feel hops, bumps, whatever it is. Then we have to determine why do we have the run out. Now, when I went through, I went to a training program with Michelin. I got to spend a day down at their test track, and I got to talk to their engineers. In their process, every time they mount a tire, it sounds like a lot of work, but it's really not. When you watch it, and what they would do is they would take the rim first, and they would mount the rim up on the hub. And they would use the radial runout gauge to actually check the roundness of the rim first and make sure that, now with steel wheels, you could get a wheel way out of round. Aluminum are usually pretty true, but they can also get damaged. So that was their first step. Then they would pull the rim back off and they would mount the tire. Now, once they mounted the tire, and you have to use all the right procedures. It's amazing how many tire guys have gotten sloppy or they were never taught right, and they don't use the right procedures. Using the right amount of lube on the tire to the rim, using the right inflation procedure. Once the tire's on the rim, then a quick check is to measure tire in front of you and think of a cross. So you have a point at the top, the bottom, and one on each side, 4 points. And right where the rim meets the tire, there is a line in the tire itself. And that line is there so that you can measure from the line to the rim. And you should be within an eighth or even a 16th of an inch all the way around. That tells us the tire got mounted properly. Once we know the rim is round and the tire is mounted properly, there's also a mark on the tire to make sure you put it on the rim in the right place. Once we do that, then we're going to put the tire back on the truck. And there is the music, so I'm going to get to a break and I'm going to come back. And we're going to finish walking through this procedure and talk more about what we would do when something is out of round. Stick around. We'll be right back. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The number for our Tribe Care team, if you need help with anything off the air, give us a call. We're there to help. It's 855-800-FUEL, 855-800-3835. I'm going to go back to Pennsylvania. I was talking with Nicholas. So once we get to this point, the tire and the wheel go back up on the truck, mount it properly the way it should be done. And one of the tricks to doing this, if you want to make sure that the rim gets centered properly on the hub, and it takes two people, or there are a couple ways you can do it, but you put all of the lug nuts on, you snug two or three down, not very tight, but just enough so we know we're close to mounting, and then you apply the brakes. And the brakes, when they expand against the brake drum, will center the assembly. Then with the brakes applied, you tighten down all the lug nuts. That's going to make sure we've got the assembly centered. The other option is to use a product like True Balance, which is a centering sleeve that you slide over the stud, and that will center the wheel and keep it centered. Once that's on, now we would check radial runout. By checking radial runout, you're going to put the runout gauge against the face of the tread, spin the wheel, and watch the gauge. And we want less than 60 thousandths. If you have less than 60 thousandths, according to Michelin, there is no need to balance a tire at all. If you have a good quality tire, you've done all the right things, and you've centered and checked for runout, you don't need to balance the tire. Disagree with them, but I also know that when we go down the road, things can change. So I'd like to take one more step in this process, and that is to use Counteract, the balance beads, when we mount the tire. That way, if anything changes, I'm going to get the best balance possible all the time. Now, your question was, what happens if it's out of round, if it's more than 60 thousandths? If we would have done all these steps, we're almost guaranteed that we're going to be within round, or we're going to have a bad tire, bad rim, but we probably would have found it in this process. So the way you figure out why it's out of round is go back through this process. pull the wheel off, make sure that it's mounted on the rim properly, check, you know, that it's centered when it's installed, check the radio run out again. Most of the things that you do in all those steps I just outlined will eliminate all the reasons why a tire would ever be more than 60 thousandths out of round. The only other thing that will do it is a bad tire. Now, even a bad tire can be fixed, and we could add this step. It's something that I do on my tires. Not a lot of shops have the equipment, but you can find it. You can actually true a tire, and there's a machine that you mount the tire up on the machine, the wheel and the tire spins, and the machine actually cuts some rubber off on the high spots. So if there's any high spots on the tire at all, the machine will actually cut away some of the rubber in those spots and give you a perfectly round tire. Now, I started doing that on all of my steer tires. Every time I mounted a steer tire, I did that. And it is amazing how much that will improve things. People say, oh, but you're taking, you know, rubber off a tire you just spent $600 on. Yeah, I am, but the tire's going to last longer. So I take a little rubber off where I don't need it, and then the tire becomes more true. It lasts longer. I get a better ride, better handling, all kinds of benefits. Technically, we even get better fuel economy if we do all of these things because we reduce rolling resistance. You could run into some other problems that could cause you to be more than 60 thousandths out, but it's pretty rare. If you go through all these steps, you're going to come up with a tire and a wheel assembly that's true. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I appreciate the education. Everybody always hears the term, but we never get into from A to Z on how to do it. So I definitely appreciate the education. On to my second question, my oil sample that they should have sent over to you. You should see two samples, and I changed the oil, and I went to a baseline sample, and they're showing silver in the sample, and the truck did not go down the road, come up to operating temperature, pulled it from the OPS, and I show silver in it. Any thoughts? I've never known they put a silver in as an additive.
Silver is not an additive. And one of the ways that we know that is if you look at the headings on the OPS sample, we have wear metals on the left column, then we have contaminant metals, then we have multi-source metals. And the reason they call them multi-source is because it's possible they're an additive. It's also possible that they could come out of some of the components. Pretty rare, though. Then we have pure additive metals, things like magnesium, calcium. The last two, the multi-source and the additive, we can almost always, in fact, I'm just going to say we can always ignore them. In all the years I've been doing oil samples, I've never seen anything in those categories matter. The wear metals and the contaminant metals, those are the ones we want to watch. Now, where did the silver come from if there's no use on this oil? Probably from the refining equipment itself. Somewhere along the line, as this oil was being refined, processed, handled, moved, bottled, whatever was being done, somewhere it picked up silver. But we're talking about one part per million. It also picked up a little bit of lead, a little bit of copper, a little bit of aluminum, and some iron. Who knows where, but it doesn't really matter. What we're looking for in a sample is levels that would indicate a problem. Now, I love the fact that you did a baseline. That's a great way of doing it. That way you know where your oil started, and then we can really see what might be going on in the engine. But those trace amounts of wear metals you see in there, I've poured oil right out of the bottle, never even put it in an engine, and had trace amounts like that before.
Okay. And it just kind of concerned me, but I figured it was that way, but that's why I wanted it as a baseline so that when I do, because I plan on going fairly extended intervals with this, so I wanted a good baseline. Back to your open
perfect.
That you did with fuel mileage, and a lot of people don't keep track of it, but even in personal vehicles, fuel mileage tracking is, if you do it every time and you have that information in front of you, you can tell when fuel filters, when air filters, when something isn't right, because you will see a change in those numbers if you have them on a long-term basis. Every day that I've ever owned a vehicle, I have fuel mileage information on that vehicle, whether it was personal or commercial. And I can't stress that enough for people. Do that, and that will change your life in knowing what your vehicle is doing.
You know, that's a great point. It's something I didn't mention about fuel economy this time. I have in the past. But, you know, we just talked about an oil sample and fuel mileage. And if you track those things consistently, fuel on every tank, oil samples, you know, 20, 25,000 miles, whatever it is, you will know more about your engine than almost anybody else. And it will be so much easier to troubleshoot. You will catch problems long before they really become problems. So those are two fairly simple things we can do that will help you understand your engine and avoid a lot of problems and save a lot of money. Good point.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for the call. Good stuff. Let's. Oh boy, we're coming up on a break, so I'll take us into the break. And we get back, we'll get to more of your calls and questions. So great example there of a couple simple things that can really make a big difference when your business depends on a piece of equipment. Now, for some of you, maybe they don't sound simple. Maybe you dread the thought of checking fuel mileage. Give it a shot, though. Try it. Oil samples, not that big of a deal. The amount of information you get from an oil sample compared to the cost is very, very minor. I have saved people $15,000 or $20,000 engines by having a $50 oil sample. If you get fuel dilution and you're not oil sampling, you'll never know it. If you get coolant intrusion, you're not going to know it till it's too late. Both of those things can do lots of damage. Dirt, silicon in the oil, you'll never know it's there. But it will wipe out cylinders very, very quickly. I just can't imagine why you would have an expensive piece of equipment and not spend a little bit of money on an oil sample or tracking fuel economy. And tracking fuel economy is free. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I want to tell you about our text message system. We do a lot of recording and shows off the air. We have a whole list of podcast shows. We're getting ready to start some new ones. In fact, let me tell you about one of the new shows. We are bringing back an old favorite. For the longtime listeners, you will remember this would go back to 07, 08. We used to do a show called the Power Hour, the Pittsburgh Power Hour, and Bruce Mallinson and I would do the show together, and all the questions would be about engines and fuel mileage and performance and troubleshooting, and we are bringing that back. it's going to be better than ever, because not only will Bruce be joining me on that show, but Bruce also has a team of electrical engineers that have a better understanding of the electronics and the electrical systems on these trucks than anybody else I know. These are guys who spend all day in the lab working on ECMs. They have three dynos available to them. They put trucks on dynos and monitor all the electronics. They have even developed their own troubleshooting tools. One of the things I'm excited about is that they actually use my scan gauge as one of their tools when they have trucks on the dyno for monitoring and troubleshooting. But those guys do this all day long. That's what they do. They will be joining us on the show as well to answer electrical and electronic questions. So we will be kicking that show off here, I'm really hoping within the next week or two. I need to get a couple things done, and we'll let you know about that. We have our show Destination Health. We have shows about rates and lanes. We have shows about getting your own authority and running as a carrier. And we are looking to expand and add other topics as well. Now, the best way to know about those shows, when we record, how to get in, how to get a question answered, is to be on our text message list. It's real simple to do. So grab your phone, and if you're not driving, don't do this while you're driving. Grab something to write with, either one. This is so easy, you could do it on your phone right now. So you're going to send a text message, just like you would to anybody else. Instead of a phone number, you're going to put in what's called a short code. If you're in the U.S., that short code is 99,000, 99000. If you're in Canada, our friends north of the border, the short code is 76,000, 76000. That's where you would put the phone number, put that short code. In the body of the text, type the word listen. Don't worry about capitalization, punctuation, none of that. Just the word listen. Hit send, and you will get a response in about 30 seconds or so. That lets you know you're on the system. Now, once you do that, every time we record, we have a podcast show going on, we have events, we'll send you a text message with the time and the phone number. You just call in and you can be a part of those shows. It's a great way to get your questions answered. All right, I am going to head off to Colorado this time. Brian, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing today?
Doing good. What's on your mind?
Well, a quick comment about the keto diet. I've been on about 4 weeks now and lost 20 pounds.
Excellent.
And just feel great. This is amazing.
That's the thing I'd love to hear, and everybody says it. You know, the weight kind of drops off. People are surprised at how much weight they lose and how easy it is. But I think what's more important is just how people feel. All those things that they tell us are just a part of getting old. Oh, you're going to get more fatigued. You're going to get more aches and pains. You're not going to sleep as well. You're not going to think as clearly. None of those things are true. They have nothing to do with getting old. What they are is our body finally saying, enough. You've been abusing me for decades, and we're wearing out. But the beauty of our body is, once you get your diet right, all that stuff goes away. Your body is amazing at being able to rebuild itself and recover and repair, and this diet will really do it.
Yeah, I'm eating a lot less quantity of food, and really am not feeling hungry. You know, I can go 8 hours, 10 hours, and you know, I can tell my stomach's empty, but I just not like that dying thing you're talking about. And
don't you find it hard
in the world
to describe that to? Yeah, don't you find it hard to describe to somebody else the fact that you know you haven't eaten in hours? Like you said, you can feel your stomach's empty. That almost feels good, though. It kind of makes you feel lighter, and yeah. And you, Yeah, and then when you really get hungry, you know you're hungry, you know your body needs calories, you eat, you don't have to eat as much if you're eating the right food, and you feel satisfied,
yeah.
but you don't feel all full and bloated.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm finding when I sit down to eat dinner at night, I eat about half as much as I used to eat, which also compounds the weight loss thing. So,
right. Good.
Yeah, it's just
excellent.
The easiest. I mean, it just blew me away. You know, it's just like all of a sudden I stepped on the scale and, you know, it's like 5 pounds lighter. And you go, what happened? You know?
Yeah.
It was like no work. You expect that to be work. And
you expect that you're going to have to suffer. You know, you're going to have to be hungry all the time. And you don't.
Yeah.
When we eat the food our body was designed to eat, everything works right.
Absolutely. Hey, I just had a quick question on that counteract. It doesn't make sense to me from physics that would actually balance your tire, because if you have an oblong, you know, if you've got a tire that's out of balance, wouldn't those beads tend to want to go towards that out of balance thing and make it actually worse?
Well, you're on the right track. They do go towards the out of balance spot, but they make it better. So they find the spot that has the least amount of weight. So, you know, if you've got this 2-ounce heavy spot in a tire, the beads will go to the opposite side. The beads won't go where it's heavier. The beads will go to the opposite side to create that balance. And again, that is physics. We know that it works. And there have been products on the market since I've been in the industry. Now, I knew guys that used to put golf balls in their tire. I knew guys who would put antifreeze in their tires, marbles. All of those things actually work, but they all have some downsides. Antifreeze will deteriorate the inside of the tire. Golf balls and marbles will beat the inside of the tire. When you stop, they all drop down to the bottom, and you got to get rolling again for it to work. I used to use two products called Equal and Balance, and the problem with those is that over time they would absorb water, and they would start to clump up, and that would create some problems. So I've always known that we can put things in the tire and it will balance. But there was never a product that I was totally happy with putting inside my tire. Counteract, they're made out of glass. They can't absorb anything. They actually create static so that they cling to the spots in the tire. And you can tell that because take a tire with Counteract in it, whack it, and you'll hear the beads drop off. Now, the next time you spin it, the friction will build up. They'll go back to where they belong, and they'll cling there. And they really do work.
Yeah. Well, I believe they do, but it just kind of seems a little bit counterintuitive to me when you think about it initially. So I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah.
I was listening to the previous call. They're talking about turning the wheel and stuff. I've got some issues with some hopping. And so I'm gonna try these counteracts, see if that helps a little bit, and then probably get it in to have it all looked at. So,
yeah, that sounds like a plan. Like I say, if you do all those steps, and if you include the truing, you will get the best riding steer tires you have ever seen. Actually, it was David Counts down at Fleet Air Filter that showed me. He has a truing machine down there. He does a lot of high-end RV stuff. And, you know, somebody spends $1 million on their coach, they don't want wheel hop. So he makes it a point to always true the steer tires. And if you're running steer tires in other positions, you could true those as well. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Ruff. I'm All right, a quick heads up. We're heading into the fourth segment of the first hour at the end. I'm going to say goodnight, goodbye, all that stuff. Hang around. We're going to come back and do another hour. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment, so I'm going to get right back to some phone calls. Let's head off to Chicago. Stuart, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. I've been running traffic gauges the last 4 years as an owner-operator and fuel gauges. You should have my numbers pulled up. I was wondering what you thought of my numbers, if you saw any money leaks, places I could be doing something better.
Ah, well, first of all, congratulations on, consistent years of doing your numbers. And you are a classic case of what I see. And, I'll give you the whole picture. I don't know if all of this applies to you or not, but I know guys who have been owner-operators for years and years, and they struggle. They love what they do. They're good at driving, they're good at delivering freight, they're good at all the things, except the business never really seems to thrive. They always feel like they're one major breakdown away from a real problem. They have to make sometimes poor decisions. They'll buy recaps because they can't afford new tires when it happens. And then they'll start doing their numbers. And if they stick with it, we see a consistent change. Now, before we get into the meat of this, there's two numbers we can look at really quickly to see how the business is doing. One is gross revenue. How much do you make before any expenses? And then the other one is net profit. How much are you making after you pay all your expenses? So let's go through those real quick. So if we go back to 2013.
Go
ahead.
Well, I was going to say in 2014, I brought in about $170,000, and I had about $35,000 at the end of it. That's on the profit gauges, profit and loss statement. When I go to ATBS, my tax guy, they adjusted gross income. They said was around $70,000 because I had deductions that I was carrying over from 2012 and 2013. I am running, as you mentioned, recaps. Yeah, first year I was in business, I ran recaps, but now I'm sitting on all Michelin XEA 3+ Evertreads on the tractor and very, very the lowest rolling resistance Goodyear tires on the trailer.
Excellent, excellent. And that's exactly what I mean by, and it fits very well with my open. You make small changes that start to compound. You started tracking your numbers so then you could see where you needed to make a change. You make a change that puts a little more money in your pocket. You make another change. Pretty soon you don't have to buy recaps anymore. You're buying top-of-the-line tires, which, even though they're more expensive, they actually put more money to the bottom line. So without getting too deep
just
into
as a side note, I run 55 miles all the time since I've owned the tractor.
There you go. So 2013, you had gross revenue of $1.55 a mile, very respectable, but you were only keeping 25 cents of it. And we could probably dig into all kinds of details why, but let's just look at the progression first. So in 2014, your revenue went from $1.55 to $1.84, nice jump, and you were keeping 37 cents of it. That's another nice jump, 12 cents a mile raise in a year. So then we look at 2015, which for a lot of people, their revenue went down in 2015. They did really well in 14 and 15. It went down. You had a nice jump up. You went to $2.05 a mile, and on the bottom line, 61 cents. That is an incredible transformation over a couple years.
I started focusing on only $3 a mile over-dimensional freight on a step deck.
Boy, it has made a huge difference. And, at 25 cents a mile, let's just go back to there. most people, if we gave them the choice, hey, look, you can be a company driver at 40 cents a mile, or you can be an owner-operator at 25. I think we know what most people would answer. Now, I would be one of the guys that would take the 25, knowing I now put myself in control and I could change that. When I'm an employee, not a whole lot I can do. So, but most people would say, oh, my God, why would you ever be an owner-operator for 25 cents a mile? All the extra work, all the extra risk, all that stuff. But this is why you do it, because you turn that 25 cents a mile into 61 cents a mile in just 2 years. That's incredible. So, and I'm sure you're going to keep going. Now, let's look through. Something just jumped out at me. Maintenance in 2015. What have you spent so much money on this year?
So it's a 2003 Ken T600. So I am taking your advice. I'm replacing one piece of the truck at a time, just whether it needs it or not for a schedule. So everything that's hanging off of the engine has been replaced. So to answer your question, I've been at Pittsburgh Power, and I just redid the four-core radiator, heavy-duty fan, and stainless steel upper and lowers, and redid the Pittsburgh Power muffler. There's probably something else in there. Maintenance, I had 8 new Goodyear low-rolling resistance tires on, so that's $7,000 or $8,000 right there. Or no,
that
not
is.
That much, about
so,
$4,000.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Your maintenance, just to give everybody an idea, and I love what you're doing. All those items, to me, those are an investment, not really an expense. And your maintenance is at 49 cents a mile. Now, once you get that done, and that will end, then between truck and trailer, I'm going to guess you're going to spend 15 cents a mile or less, which would mean you would be able to add another 35 cents to the bottom line, which puts you up into the closing in on a dollar a mile range. So I fully expect that this rise in revenue and profit is going to continue for the next couple of years.
Because I've had a real challenge. One of the main reasons I'm calling you is I've had a real challenge. August, September, my freight has really dropped off dramatically. The three main, I'm leased on with Admiral Merchants, been there a year, and my three main agents I get my freight from are having trouble finding decent freight. I've been sitting more than I normally do.
This is a good point. Now, let's think about this. Let's say that we're back in 2013, 2 years ago, you're only netting 25 cents a mile, and something like that would have happened. You would have had a big drop-off in revenue, or you would have had a big major repair. That would have been tough to absorb. Now, I'm not saying it's going to be any fun right now, but you've at least built that cushion where you can buy yourself some time and start looking for some options. And there's another good lesson here. I've been in business my whole life, virtually. I started painting cars on my own when I was 16, and I've owned a business of one kind or another ever since. And the one thing I've learned is that don't ever get too comfortable. The things that can change in business, the list is unlimited. And it's almost always the thing you don't expect that changes. And for me, I think that's why I like being in business. I like that constant challenge. I like that idea that, okay, what's going to happen next and what do I have to do to solve it? So, you know,
I was
your
socking
problem
away. On top of that, in 2014 and 2015, I was socking away $400 a week going towards my rebuild fund, because I'm at 1,000,002 miles going to Pittsburgh Power. So in August, I had $20,000 cash in the bank, and I've been calling in on some of that for these lean months since the last 3 months.
And that's good. That's good. I mean, it's not good that it's happening. It's good that you were prepared for it. So now we have to start looking at how do we solve this problem. you know, how do we get the revenue back up? And there's no, you know, people wonder why I focus on the expense side of business first. And the reason I do is because the expense side is fairly simple. You look at an expense, you say, it's too high, what can we do to lower it? And usually the things are pretty obvious. The revenue side is much more of an art than it is a science. You know, what do we do to go get more revenue? Well, find higher paying loads. That sounds easy enough, but how do you do that? These three agents, it sounds like you've got a pretty good relationship with them.
Yes, I've been moving there. One gentleman, I was moving his freight exclusively all in 2014. Then as I moved around to put more eggs in my basket, he felt I wasn't loyal to him and won't load me anymore. But then, so there's two or three other agents, yeah, and they know what my capabilities are as far as over-dimensional in and out of New York City. Yeah, so I need to, and the freight just dropped out on me for step deck and flatbed freight.
Yep, I wish I had a little more time. Maybe we'll pick this up on another show, but let me give you this quick piece of advice with the time I have left. Go back to the agents, go meet them in person. I don't know if you've done that yet or not, but go meet them in person, renew your commitment to them, and share your goals and what you're trying to accomplish. And that's a start. Let's start there, and then let's talk about this again on another show. I've got to get out of here. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. We are going to start a second hour. Let me check questions real quick. Looks like we've got a lot of questions, so I'm just going to go ahead and get to it. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business
and Beyond,
the show that puts the money where it belongs,
back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking. We take your calls and we answer your questions about trucks, money, fuel mileage, maintenance, tires, taxes, technology, health and fitness on the road, getting started as an owner-operator, finding freight, working with brokers, building a fleet. In fact, if you've got a question about anything at all, pick up the phone, give me a call, and we'll tackle it here on the air. We're going to get to those calls and questions in just a couple minutes. In one of the last shows, I talked about a strategy of listing all the things you could do in a certain area of your life, business, fuel mileage, your health, your relationships, money, whatever it might be, and then once you've got a list of all the things you could change to make that area better, finding the easiest, the drop-dead, simple one thing you could do that you know would make it better, even if it's only a tiny, tiny bit better, and building on that, doing that one thing for a week or 2 weeks or a month or whatever is easy for you. You know, it's almost the opposite of my favorite saying of do the hard work. Some people aren't able to, and most of us aren't able to do the hard work everywhere where we need to be doing it. I certainly can't. So one of the strategies I've figured out is do the easy work and then do some more easy work and then some more easy work and add one more thing. And pretty soon you're doing enough easy work that it adds up to doing the hard work. So keep that in mind. Give it a try. You know, one of the changes that I made health-wise, I've made a lot of changes health-wise in the last year, and the results are fantastic. I'm so glad I did. Some of them were very, very simple. I read a report that, and there's lots of research out about this now, that sitting is the new smoking. Like sitting long periods of time is bad for your health as smoking. Now, that seems pretty extreme because we know how bad smoking is. But I got thinking, you know, even though I consider myself to be an active, fit person, I got looking at my life as an adult. Now, growing up, I hardly ever sat. I mean, I was always out running around. I was very active. I was always in sports. All through high school, I was active and in sports. The jobs that I had when I was going through high school were all very active. I was on my feet all day. My first business when I was 16 was painting cars, but that was pretty active. You know, you're doing a lot of sanding, a lot of pounding, a lot of painting. You're constantly moving. There was no real sitting in that job. Then my second business was a gym, and I didn't sit then. I was on my feet all day helping people. I worked as a personal trainer in the gym, so I was very active in that job. And then I got a job driving a truck when I was 22, and I was sitting 12, 13, 14, 15 hours a day, and I did that for over a decade, a million miles. Then when I got out of the truck, I got an office job, and I was sitting all day long, sometimes more sitting in that job than when I was in the truck. And I started thinking, I've had two decades of sitting a lot, and I'm preaching to the choir here. Just about everybody listening to me sits all day in the truck. So I started standing up when I did my show. So that was, 13 hours a week or so that I used to sit through every show, and now I stand. And I got to tell you that the first couple weeks, it was painful. There were parts of my body that I didn't even know existed that I started feeling because I was standing up so much and I was walking more. I even started reading while I was on the treadmill instead of sitting or laying down. And it's been a huge benefit. I feel better for it. I know it's better for my health. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to take it one step further. I have been looking at what are called balance boards. And the other thing is our team here at Let's Truck, Kim and Angie and Lori and Lisa and Brittany, we're into this. We share it when we see an article, when we see something, we talk about it with each other. And the other day, Angie sent out a link to this balance board. And it looks kind of like a skateboard, but the bottom of it is kind of on a round ball almost, and you stand on it and you maintain your balance. And it's amazing how many muscles you activate standing on this thing. So when you first get on it, I got on it and I thought, well, this is easy. It's not really that hard to balance. It moves around a little bit, but I ride a unicycle, so I have pretty good balance anyway. But I thought, this is pretty easy. I don't really feel it much in my muscles. So could this really do much? So the first day I decided to do my show, it was a weekend show, it was 3 hours this past weekend, and because I was talking the whole time, I wasn't really paying attention, but I was on the board the whole time. And I did notice my feet, the muscles in my feet started to get a little tired, and my calves were getting a little fatigued, but it didn't seem like a big deal. Until the next day, about 36 hours later, and every muscle in my body hurt. I could feel everything. So I know that this board and standing on it, and then you can do other things. There are some move can do and some exercise. I know that this thing works. So I am now standing on my balance board for every show. Now, I bring this up because I've got a challenge for you. I've been thinking about this issue for a while, and I'm not coming up with any really good ideas. So I want you to help me out with this. We know that sitting is unhealthy. We know that truck drivers have to sit a lot. There's no way around that. Unless we could design a truck that you could stand up and drive, I don't know what else we could do. Now, what they claim is for people who have to sit a lot, and truck drivers would certainly qualify for that, that you can counteract that sitting, the effects of that sitting, by getting up and moving every hour. Well, you know what? If you work in an office, that's fairly easy. It's no big deal when you work in an office to get up once an hour, stretch, walk around the office, even take a stroll outside. It might take you 5 minutes, no big deal. You could probably get up and stretch and do some, you know, good yoga positions in 2 or 3 minutes and get the benefits. But we all know in a truck, if you tried to stop every hour, not only would it be difficult just finding a place to stop, but you would lose at least 10 minutes out of every hour. Now, if we do that for a 10-hour day, an 11-hour day, we're talking about losing 2.5 to 3 hours of productivity. As much as I know that health is important, I can honestly tell you I wouldn't be able to do that when I was out on the road trying to make money. So here's my challenge to you. Let's get really creative about this. What could we do? What ideas could we come up with to get people up on their feet more often? One of the ways you could do it is instead of doing it every hour, do it every three. You know, stop 3 times a day at least. Get out, stand up, move around, those kind of things. But what ideas could we come up with that would make it a little easier? I don't know. Certainly, any time you got stopped in traffic, in an accident, and you know that it's not moving, stand up next to your seat. Stretch. You know, stand while you can. So be looking for those opportunities. But what I'm looking for from you are some ideas. You're out there on the road every day. Think while you're sitting and driving. Let's come up with some ideas to get drivers up on their feet more. One that I thought of is team drivers. Team drivers may be worse at this because not only are they sitting when they're driving, but most of the time they're sitting while the other person is driving and they're laying down the rest of the time. So this one is fairly easy to solve. When you're a team driver, don't sit. Stand when you're not driving. If you're not driving or sleeping, stand. Build a standing desk in the truck. Get one of these surfboards. One of these balance boards would be great in the truck going down the road. Now, I know I'm probably going to get blasted because you're not in a seatbelt, but I still think it's a good idea. I'd love to hear your ideas. If you can get through, tell them to me on the air. If you can't, send them to support@letstruck.com. Send me an email with your ideas. Stick around. We'll be right back. We'll get to your calls and questions. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. I'm going to get right to the phone calls. Let's go to Georgia. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I had some questions about taxes. I was hoping you could go over again for us the program that Let's Truck is offering this year with the partner firm you folks partnered with.
Yes, I can do that. Yeah, and actually now we have a program or a plan that would cover everybody listening to me, whether you're a company driver, a lease purchase driver, an owner-operator with one truck, a carrier with your own authority, or a fleet of 20 trucks. Doesn't matter whether you're a sole proprietor, an LLC, a corporation, doesn't matter whether you want to do the accounting or you want us to do it. We literally have launched full service where we have a program for everybody. Now, because, I did this for a long, long time. I did this for 17 years and then started the radio show and got away from the tech side of things. But looking at it this time, I wanted to make sure the people doing the tax work were fully committed, and that's all they did. I have too much stuff going on. Virtually everybody in our company does. So we partnered with the top-notch accounting firm, Clifton Larson Allen, and they have dedicated a team just to us, just doing trucking, and we have built this system together with them over 2 years. So this isn't something we just threw together. We've been putting this together for 2 years. We've been doing some test markets. We've been working with some people directly. And now we've launched it full-blown. So if you wanted to do your own accounting, you can use our software, Profit Gauges, and then it fully integrates with our tax service with CLA. So you're good there. If you say, look, I don't want to screw around with my receipts, my settlements, I don't want to do any of my own accounting, we have a program now. We send you out prepaid envelopes, one for every month. You put your settlements, your receipts, everything right in the envelope. You don't have to weigh it. You don't have to pay postage. You just drop it in any mailbox, drop it at the fuel desk. It comes back to us. We scan all the receipts in. So now you have a digital copy of all those receipts and you have access to them. And we do the data entry, the accounting for you. You still have access to your reports because we use our software, Profit Gauges, and it's online. So you can go in, see your reports, print your reports. At the end of the year, we have all the information for the taxes on your business. Your tax return gets done. It's all built into one monthly price. And it depends whether you're a sole proprietor, multiple trucks, but it's very competitively priced. We're not the cheapest on the market, but we're certainly the best. So whatever your needs are, we have a program that'll fit them.
Okay, that sounds good. I'll definitely be in touch with you all about that. And I was also had a couple questions about a few deductions. I was reading an article online, and they were saying that you can deduct your health insurance premiums if you are self-employed for 2015. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I'm actually going to go check right now, and the reason is this is one of those deductions that the IRS keeps changing, and they change it at the goofiest times. I remember a year where they actually changed this deduction on April 14th, and they made it retroactive for the previous year. So people who had filed their tax return already had to go back and amend their tax return. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. So I remember years when self-employed health insurance wasn't deductible at all. I remember when it was deductible at 25%. I remember when it was deductible at 75%, and for a long time it's been deductible at 100%, but even though you're self-employed, it wasn't ever a business deduction. It was only a personal deduction, and that makes a big difference. It means it doesn't affect your Social Security and Medicare at all. So when you read this, do you remember whether they were claiming it was a personal? The way I understand it, and I'm going to look to make sure there isn't some sort of a change, is that it's still just a personal deduction.
Yes, you're correct, Kevin. It's just a personal deduction. It does not affect your self-employment tax, but it says if you were single or ineligible for any employer-provided health plan you were self-employed or you left your job, then it says you would be able to claim that deduction.
Got it.
And then they have a certain number of ages.
And I just wanted to make sure that they didn't make some crazy change lately here that I missed. So it's still the way it's been for several years. So you do get 100% of the deduction on your personal tax return, doesn't affect your business taxes. Now, when you talk to CLA, Clifton Larson Allen, our accounting firm, there is a strategy, if you're married, that we can make your health insurance fully deductible. Not only your health insurance, but all of your health care costs, we can make them fully deductible on your business. And the way we do it is we make the spouse an employee, and one of the employee benefits is full health care coverage. And then the spouse puts all the rest of the family on their plan. Now, the business is reimbursing the employee for all of the health care costs, insurance, deductibles, prescriptions, glasses, dental, everything, and it all becomes fully deductible on the business. That's a strategy that CLA helped us put in place.
That's a great strategy. I'd heard you talk about that before on the show, and that is really cool if you are married and have a family. And I also had a couple other questions. Now, I'm sure a lot of guys listening are also can relate to this, but I have a great mechanic that moonlights, and basically it's a cash basis, does a lot of work for me, saved me thousands of dollars over the past year on this older Volvo. And I was just going to see what that looks like when it comes time to file. Can you deduct that expense as well, or...
You know, this is tricky. You can deduct it. There's no question. It, just because it's cash doesn't mean it's not deductible. Now, you would need some sort of a receipt, which I'm sure he doesn't want to give you if he's moonlighting and not claiming this income. Am I correct?
He said he'd give me a receipt. I really haven't, asked about it too much. I've been getting a great rate, so I really haven't worried about too much. If I'm not able to claim it, I'm still saving money.
Yeah, if he will give you a receipt or an invoice, it's clearly all deductible. Now, there's a very, very tiny, tiny, minuscule, did I say tiny, chance that if you were audited and they had these receipts, they could possibly go check his return to make sure he's reporting it as income. I can tell you in 20-some years of doing this, I've never seen it happen. But it's something you should probably talk to him about and be clear that if he's giving you a receipt, you want to deduct it. Just make him aware that you're doing this because it's a good arrangement there. But as long as he's okay with that, then yes, you can clearly deduct all of this expense.
Okay. Yeah, it's worth his weight in gold and, so much more flexible and having to take your truck to a shop. And so I just may not even worry about it because, like I said, even if I don't deduct it, I'm still saving a great amount of money, and I wouldn't want that to come back on him. So I was just curious about that as well. But
Let me just give you some numbers so that, and for you and anybody else who's listening, so you would be able to compare this. Now, look, if he's a great mechanic, even if I had to pay more, I would do it. I money isn't always my first choice when it comes to maintenance and repair work. I will almost always pay more to make sure I get good service because it's worth it. But let's just take a for example to see if the savings is offsetting the tax or not. Let's say that you were going to take your truck into a shop and they, for whatever this repair was, they were going to charge you $1,000. If he charged you $700, we would be dead even. Tax-wise, if we calculated everything in, that would be exactly the same. So if he charges you more than $700 on a $1,000 repair, you're paying a little extra for his service, even throwing in the taxes. If he charges you less than $700, then not only are you getting great service, but you're saving money even if you don't claim it on taxes. Does that make sense?
Okay. It sure does. Well, local Volvo dealer here charges $144 an hour, and I'm paying about $50, and he's more than happy.
Oh.
So we got a great setup.
Excellent. Love it.
Well, I certainly appreciate your time, Kevin. Thanks for all the great questions. And I'll definitely be in touch. I tried calling before, but I must be dyslexic. For some reason, I was calling 800-855-FUEL, and it's really 855-800-FUEL, I figured out.
I'm glad you said that because we love that number. We paid extra to get that number, but people do always think the 800 should go first, so it doesn't hurt to mention that. Our number is 855 then 800, then fuel. Good point. Stick around. We'll be right back with more stuff. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. Our number again off the air, 855, then 800, then fuel, 3835. 855-800-3835. We're off to New Jersey. Alex, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. How are you today?
Good. What's on your mind today?
Well, Kevin, I'd like to get your opinion on something that, you know, the more that I think about, the concerns me a lot. I mean, I don't know if you know that I think last week a federal rule to require truck operators and everybody to use electronic logging devices, you know, and keep records of the hours of service passed the White House and the management budget. And it's already, you know, getting to be publicized, and this is the final version of the rule, so which means that it will take effect, you know, it will take like 2 years to hit everybody. Now,
right. This
just, you know, the more I think about it, the more it bothers me, because, I mean, I understand that you got to keep up, you know, you got to, you know, respect the rules, and yeah, you know, there's always all work and whatever, and that's the bottom line. But this, to me, is just a way of the big carriers and the government to drive out small owner operators out of the business, because Let's think this for a second. I mean, how is the government going to regulate us and trying to control us when they can't control our shippers and receivers? I've been at places where I have, you know, trying to deliver, and I've been waiting for 6 to 7 hours. And when I look at my log book, I'm out of hours. So in most of these places, they're like, sorry, you got to drive out of our property, and there's no parking anywhere, and there's nowhere to go. And, you know, this is just ridiculous. You know, it is just ridiculous. Mind you, I know you got to respect the rules, but, you know, I mean, this happened to me twice this week. I was, you know, late. You know, I was hauled back for 4 hours at one place, and then I was hauled back in another place for 6 hours. I mean, how is a guy going to make money? Fuel is cheaper now, but, you know, things are getting costly and costly. I mean, you know, you go for a transmission rebuild, it's almost like the same price to get an in-frame. And, you know,
yeah,
I mean,
well,
how are you going to make money?
I'm with you now. Now, as far as fuel being cheap, I think that's a bad thing. When fuel is more expensive, it's easier for an owner-operator to make money because of the surcharge. But let's set that aside for a second. I'm with you. I hate all the regulations. I am so disgusted right now with the transportation bill that's going on, the ELDs, all the medical stuff that's going on.
Mm-hmm.
You're right. It,
mm-hmm.
it is hurting small carriers far more. The big carriers will figure out a way to deal with it. They always will. They'll be around. The weak ones might go out of business, but that'll just make the bigger ones even bigger. So it's the little guy that gets strangled by all these crazy regulations.
Yep.
You're right. ELDs are coming. It's done. We have 2 years. Now, a year ago, I said they're coming. Actually, about 8 years ago, I said they were coming. I just didn't know when. And that came from people I knew in Washington that told me that. They told me 10 years ago, it's not a matter of if we'll get ELDs, it's just a matter of when. Well, when is here now? I said about a year ago that if I were an owner-operator today, or even a driver, I would be running under my own ELD. I would have started a year ago. I would certainly start right now. That way, you can start to learn strategies, because you, in my opinion, you either learn how to deal with this or you get the hell out of the industry, because I don't see how this is ever going to get changed. It's reality. Now, if it were up to me, not only would I eliminate ELDs, I would just eliminate the hours of service, because that's the real problem. Hours of service have always been there. We just cheat them. And we all did. Most of my, prior to being at FedEx, I did it. At FedEx, I didn't need to. And at FedEx, they wouldn't put up with any of that ever. But our system wasn't like moving general freight from shipper to shipper. We had scheduled runs, scheduled lanes. We had plenty of time to do our runs. And we just, it was easy for us to follow hours of service. But the real problem isn't the ELD, in my opinion. The real problem is the hours of service.
And if you look at it, you know, the real problem is that drivers would, you know, violate the rules when they're trying to get home. That's when the real problems occur. Most of the accidents that you see in the road is when drivers are trying to get home. They're trying to rush home, and, you know, and they don't care about the hours of services. And there you go. You see someone flipped over on the side of the road, and you see someone, you know, who crashed into a little minivan and killed, you know, 6-7 people on it. And this is quite, you know, ridiculous, because I was, you know, looking at my, you know, the other day, I was held back, you know, for 6 hours. And I look at the logbook, I'm like, this is ridiculous. You know, how, you know, I mean, you got to drop off, and then you got to pick up. And then, you know, the receiver, it holds you back for 6 hours, you know, before he, you know, unloads you. And then what do? You miss your next appointment because either you were held back at the, you know, receiver, and then you can not, or either you run out of hours to go pick up your next load. And then that can translate into thousands and thousands of dollars when you got maintenance, insurances, fuel, all sorts of things, house, you know.
Absolutely. Not only is it money, which is important to all of us, but it's time at home that it's going to take away from, which for some people is even more important. That would have been there was a time in my operation where I'd left out on Sunday night. I could usually get back through the house one time during the week for 8 or 10 hours, and then I would be home either late Friday night or early Saturday morning. Now, I will guarantee you, when I'm coming home late Friday night, early Saturday morning, and I would have been out of hours, there is no way I'm stopping for 10. That would wipe out my home time on the weekend. I'm with you on this, but I think it's the hours of service that's the real problem. But I don't think the answer is in trucking, because I don't think the problem is in trucking. We feel like it is because that's what we see. We see all the regulations that affect us. The problem is in our government in general. Our government is too big, too powerful. We have too many lobbying groups, and everybody is trying to get regulations put in place that benefit them and drive out their competition. It happens in every single industry. So trucking isn't the problem. Our government is the problem. If you vote Republican, you're part of the problem. If you vote Democrat, you're part of the problem. Those two parties have shown us clearly now that it doesn't matter which one is in power, we are going to get screwed. I voted Republican most of my life because I believed that they were better for business. I still believe they're slightly better for business than the Democrats, but not by much, not even enough to really make it worth talking about anymore. You see, either party's in power, and things just keep getting worse as far as regulations go. I am voting straight libertarian these days. If I can't find a libertarian candidate that I like, then I just won't vote in that race at all. The libertarians seem to be the only, well, Tea Party, I guess, but they have some things that I have some problems with. I tend to align myself with the libertarians much more so. They believe in smaller government than any other party, and I think that's what we've got to get to. I think most libertarians tend to support the fair tax as well, because the fair tax is a great way to shrink government quickly. Let's get to some phone calls. Let's go to Ohio. Lee, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey there.
I get leg cramps
today.
I get leg cramps at night, and I've learned to alleviate that from my father a long time ago. He said that quinine is good for leg cramps, and a great source of quinine is tonic water. So whenever I start getting a, you know, leg cramps, I tend to drink some tonic water. And I just realized reading the label the other day, the second ingredient on a bottle of tonic water is the Heathen Devil High Fructose Corn Syrup. So I'm wondering, what's the alternative? How can I get some quinine without drinking tonic water, or is there something else that can help get rid of these nighttime cramps?
There is something else, and I will tell you that this is a very common thing when people start eating a ketogenic diet. I think that one of the reasons that even though a ketogenic diet is our natural diet and it really is healthy, but if we look back historically, we've always eaten a lot of animal products. And part of a ketogenic diet, you know, is high fat, good grass-fed beef, all those things. But we've changed the kind of meat we eat. You know, if you look at most cultures historically, they ate every part of the animal. They ate feet, they ate brains, they ate ears, they ate, you know, some cultures they eat the eyeballs. I mean, they eat all the organ meats. Those parts of the animal are absolutely loaded with nutrition and a lot of minerals. If you are eating the whole animal, you're not going to have any mineral deficiencies. But when we only eat the muscle meat, then we are going to have some of these other mineral deficiencies, and we have to address those. And I think that's why a lot of people on ketogenic diets do get some muscle cramping. Three minerals we need to focus on. I will talk about that when we get back. Stick around. Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. We're down to the final segment. I'm going to get right back to the phone calls. I was talking with Lee in Ohio. So, Lee, before I get to those, I do want to go back to the quinine because I want people to realize quinine is very effective at cramping, but it also has a lot of side effects. And I really don't recommend it. If you get it in doses that are enough to offset the cramps, you're probably also going to get some of the side effects. So let me go back to a list of them just so I get them all right. Let's see. Hypoglycemia, confusion, rash, seizures, nausea, hearing disturbances, vision changes, chest pain, and excessive bleeding can all be caused by quinine.
Lately, this trucking industry is kicking my butt.
That's right. So it's one of those things that there's enough evidence of side effects in most people that I would just stay away from it. You know, even there's not a lot of it in tonic water, but people who drink a lot of tonic water are known for having many of those side effects. So I would stay away from that. Plus, I think what it's doing is really helping us cover up the fact that we do have a mineral deficiency. If our minerals are balanced, you shouldn't get the cramping. So
will the Himalayan sea salt help with that?
It will. That's number one. Any good sea salt, Himalayan pink sea salt I really like, you have to balance your salt intake with potassium. So you want to also eat foods that are very high in potassium or take a potassium supplement. This is one of those areas where I'm not a huge fan of supplements, but I will target a specific need to fix a problem. So if you find that you just can't get enough potassium in your food, then you might want to take a supplement. So it's a balance of of salt and potassium, and then the last one to throw in is magnesium. Now, again, avocados are great. Take an avocado, squeeze some lime juice on it, cover it with some good sea salt. You're going to take care of all three. If you eat an avocado a day with lime and sea salt, this will probably go away because you'll get the salt, the potassium, and the magnesium. Or look up, you know, other high foods high in magnesium and potassium. And then there's one other way on the magnesium, and I just learned this the other day. I can't believe it's so easy. If you have the ability to soak in a tub, and I know that's not always easy on the road, just go to any grocery store or any pharmacy and buy Epsom salts, which it turns out, I didn't know this, but Epsom salts are just magnesium sulfate, and your body can absorb magnesium right through your skin. Now, if you can't do a full soak in a tub, you can soak your lower legs. You know, get a bucket or whatever and dump some Epsom salt in the water, soak your feet for 15 or 20 minutes, your body will absorb the magnesium, and that's really good for sore muscles and cramping.
Wow, okay. I wanted to throw in one other thing. You said...
Sure.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
You said that you wanted us to get creative about how to, you know, not sit so much. I didn't realize that sitting as much as we do was that bad for us. I haven't seen any real bad effects from it myself, but I'm pretty skinny and healthy for 56 years old. Anyway, I started exercising behind the wheel. When I because of the demands, I'm an employee driver, and with the electronic logs and so on, I really run hard. They push us. They really do. And in order to get the 500 miles per day, I roll. One of the ways that I get better mileage is I don't stop. I'm rolling for 6-7 hours on end without stopping for anything. I mean, I don't stop until the Qualcomm light comes on and says I got a message and I can't read it until I stop. Then something's up. You know, I got to swap with somebody or you know. But I started doing leg lifts, just sitting behind the wheel, you know, one leg at a time, 30 reps, and then both legs. If you don't take a rest period in between, you actually get a pretty good cardio thing going on there, and it'll wake you right up if you can stick with it for 10 minutes, 20 minutes. And
that's a great
idea. The other thing you said earlier about you can't stand up behind the wheel, I do it every day. You know, set the seat back, get the cruise control on, tilt the steering wheel up out of your way, and just standing with your weight leaning against the back of the seat, but you're elevated, you know, you're up off your butt, it puts a great load on your thighs, so you actually get to exercise your upper legs as well.
I personally love that idea, and I used to do it too. You won't hear me give that advice on the air, but I'm glad you did.
Okay, yeah. You do want to keep the visor up out of the way. Watch the damn road.
Yeah, so I'll admit, I used to do it. You're right. You get in that kind of almost a little bit of a crouched position. It puts a huge load on your thighs, and that's really what we're trying to do. That's the whole point. All the research says that just the act of standing up and putting that load back on your skeleton and back on your muscles is all we need, and something as simple as that would do it. Now, if I start recommending that on the air, somebody's going to do it. They're going to get in a crash, and you know what will happen after that. The lawyers will be all over me.
Right, because you have so much money, I know.
Yeah. Well, I have
you're
a
like,
lot of exposure.
You're like Cliff. You got a target on your back, right?
Yeah, I'm easy to find. So I'm glad you recommended that. So, you know, another one that I do, and this doesn't really address the standing, but it does address the inactivity, and it's very easy and safe to do while you're driving, and that is the hand exercisers, the squeeze balls or the devices with the spring loaded and you squeeze them. I have one of those in all my vehicles, and when I'm driving, I do that a couple times a day. Great for hand strength, get some blood flowing. So idea like this. Now, of course, we always have to keep safety in mind. You know what is safe and what isn't. But what, you know, what the officials might think is safe and what we might do on the road, two different things. I'm pretty sure I'm a whole lot safer standing up because I become hyper-vigilant at that point. You know, I know I'm compromising safety a little bit when I do that, so I become even more vigilant. I, you know, really watch things around me. I make sure I'm paying attention. I don't do it for long periods of time. I'm positive. I'm more safe standing up like that while I'm driving than somebody who's talking on a cell phone. I'm absolutely positive I'm more safe than somebody texting. So that's kind of my take on that. Is it the absolute safest way to go down the road? No, of course not. But if we're very vigilant, we can get away with it short periods at a time without being a danger. Now I guess I'll just wait for the attorneys to start calling me. Let's squeeze in another call here. Let's go to Florida. Larry, welcome to the program.
I want to call you with an update on a 2-million-mile Mercedes-Benz engine. I called you a couple weeks ago where the fuel economy and the power was dropping off.
Yes.
Yeah. You said probably due to the age of the engine.
Right.
I couldn't accept that, and I started doing some snooping around. First thing I found out, my fuel-efficient tires were down 19%. I brought that up. It was still running rough, couldn't figure it out. Come to find out when I went in for a PM that during a B service at a major truck stop chain, the tech had put in the wrong fuel filter. And it doesn't manifest for 2 weeks. And the anxiety of 10,000 miles of, oh, my God, I'm going to put all this money back into the truck, dissipated.
Well, I am very, very glad to hear that. I'm glad you found a nice, simple solution. And I can't imagine that there's another Mercedes engine out there with 2 million miles on it. You might have the only one.
Well, I'm going for three. I did some research. The reason why Mercedes-Benz is not a popular engine, it wasn't built for speed. And it wasn't built for power. It was built to last longer than two owners.
Well, and, that would be wonderful. So I certainly hope you make it there, and we'll follow you along in that pursuit. I wish I had more time, but the music says I've got to get out of here. So many questions, so little time, but we'll do it again. Thanks for joining me. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, everybody, thanks for joining us. I'm fairly sure we're going to do this again tomorrow, but we will send out a text and let you know. We'll see you next time.